Hi, Dave Emery here, side two of For the Record program number 768. What the hell does Dave Emery mean by underground Reich? Part one, the Naumann coup attempt of 1953. This program is being recorded on January 5th of the year 2014. We're going to plunge right back into the new Germany and the old Nazis by T.H. Tetten, the last name T-E-T-E-N-S as in Sam, and you in turn are hearing an excerpt from AFA program number 37 from the fall of 1992.
Just as we took a look at Alan Dulles negotiating with people like Gero von Gebernitz, so again, the reinstitution of these Nazi industrialists and financiers in the quote new unquote Germany provided in many ways the foundation for the Naumann Group and the underground Nazi apparatus to be able to successfully fulfill its work. And note again the A-man, B-man cell system of the underground German government and the contacts of the Naumann Group with top industrialists and leading politicians, using these to fill well-paid positions in the Free Democratic Party with scores of young, and again quoting here, let me quote again directly, there was a detailed record of how Dr. Naumann had used his contacts with top industrialists and leading politicians to fill well-paid positions in the Free Democratic Party with scores of young, able Nazis who once had learned the tricks of the trade in the Goebbels propaganda ministry. Dr. Naumann's most devoted collaborator in this enterprise was his intimate friend Dr. Ernst Achenbach, A-C-H-E-N-B-A-C-H, a former Ribbentrop diplomat who, after the war, had become a prominent lawyer in the Ruhr district. It was reported that Achenbach and Naumann had been close friends during the war when they served together in important positions under Ambassador Otto Abetz, A-B-E-T-Z, in the German embassy in occupied Paris. It was Dr. Achenbach who, in 1943, recommended to the Foreign Office that 2,000 Jews be shipped to the East as reprisal for an attack on two Nazi officers. After the war, Achenbach aggressively defended Nazi notables in many war crime trials. In later years, he became the legal counselor and political confidant of a group of right-wing Ruhr industrialists. So again, note the key position of the industrialists here. With the financial power of the industrial giants of the Ruhr behind him, Achenbach exerted a dominating influence in the Free Democratic Party, where he held the important position of chairman of the Foreign Affairs Committee. Many of his close friends and connections, mainly young Nazi activists, had successfully infiltrated the two other Adenauer coalition parties, the ultra-rightist German Party and the All-German Bloc or Refugee Party, the latter appealing chiefly to the 10 million refugees from the Eastern Territories. For some time after his arrest, the British kept Dr. Naumann incommunicado because they regarded his lawyer, who was Dr. Achenbach, as severely implicated in the plot. The pro-Adenauer paper Stuttgarter Nachrichten of January 17, 1953, named Achenbach the spiritus rector behind the drive toward a neo-Nazi restoration. That's S-P-I-R-I-T-U-S-R-E-C-T-O-R. A lengthy British white paper on the Naumann-Achenbach plot was ready to be released in August of 1953 when it was suddenly, quote, withdrawn at the last moment on cabinet instructions for reasons which never have been made quite clear, unquote. There were rumors that the British had yielded under the combined pressure of Washington and Bonn. Again, note that the British white paper was withdrawn at the last minute, and although it has never been established exactly why that happened, the rumors were combined pressure from Washington and Bonn. Now bear in mind again that one of the underlying strategic and theoretical considerations of RFA 37 was the Nazi tactic of using anti-communism as a vehicle for conquest. One of the reasons why the reinstitution of Third Reich elements in the quote new unquote Germany is not generally recognized and has not been reported, particularly in this country, is that basically in the Cold War, with the fear of communism rampant in this country, it became essential from a propaganda standpoint to portray the new Germany as a democratic institution at a bulwark against the Soviet-style totalitarianism of East Germany. So anti-communism here was again strategically used in a very skillful way to cover up some of the activities, or at least to eclipse some of the activities that I'm describing here and the activities that I will be describing in installments to come. Continuing now, and now we're going to take a look at the actual structure of the Naumann Group and how it related to the decentralized post-World War II Nazi underground. And again, note that we've already seen how cellular organization and infiltration was a major tactic of the Naumann Group. Again, that coup occurred in 1953. That reflects directly the projections of Kurt Ries in 1944. Continuing now with T.H. Tetten's from 1961. Of the material that was confiscated from the Naumann plotters, much of it contained in the white paper, which was withdrawn, the confiscated material disclosed that the Achenbach-Naumann group represented a so-called Führungsring, F-U-H-R-U-N-G-S-R-N-G, a Nazi high command, a kind of political mafia with headquarters in Madrid, which operated by remote control through clever organizational schemes on different levels, serving various purposes. Again, the confiscated material disclosed that the Achenbach-Naumann group represented a so-called Führungsring, a Nazi high command, a kind of political mafia with headquarters in Madrid, which operated by remote control through clever organizational schemes on different levels, serving various purposes. This Gauleiter group met periodically in the strictest secrecy, mainly in Dusseldorf or Hamburg. Up to 30 former Nazi top officials assembled under false names as, quote, old friends, unquote, in hotels where they carried on their political scheming. Among them were the ex-Gauleiters Kaufmann, Grohe, Florian, Wegner, Frauenfeld, and Scheel, and a number of high officials from the propaganda ministry, some Ribbentrop diplomats, and top-ranking SS officers. By the way, Kaufmann, we've already seen, Grohe, G-R-O-H-E, Florian, F-L-O-R-I-A-N, Wegner, W-E-G-E-N-E-R, Frauenfeld, F-R-A-U-E-N-F-E-L-D, and Scheel, we've already seen. Continuing, according to the British correspondent Alistair Horne, H-O-R-N-E, the quote, roll calls of the ex-Gauleiters and high SS officials present read like a page from some nightmare who's who of the Third Reich, unquote. These Nazi leaders had either escaped the dragnet of the victorious Allies by false identification papers, or had been released from internment after a year or two without any substantial penalty. The aim of the group was, quote, to form the general staff of the national opposition, unquote, and build, quote, a new political party out of the existing parties of the right, unquote. Besides the infiltration of co-conspirators into positions of command within the existing parties and into government departments and party organizations on the middle and lower levels, another task of the Führungsring was to organize and direct mass organizations such as veterans and refugee associations, which one day could easily be used as instruments for political action. Other fields of activities for the group were political propaganda in foreign countries, carried out in close contact with the Nazi core headquarters in Madrid, and the initiation of conspiracies in foreign markets in behalf of German industrial cartels. So, before we continue with the next section, note that this Führungsring is described as a Nazi high command, a kind of political mafia headquartered, surprise, surprise, in Madrid, which was exactly where Kurt Ries had projected one of the major operational centers of the decentralized underground, cellularized, post-World War II Nazi underground. And note the description here, with a kind of political mafia with headquarters in Madrid, which operated by remote control through clever organizational schemes on different levels, serving various purposes. Obviously, what we're looking at here is a realization of the post-World War II plans of the Third Reich to go underground. And skipping down, some of the activities of the tasks of the Führungsring described again, organize and direct mass organizations such as veterans and refugee associations, which one day could easily be used as instruments for political action. Note here the veterans organizations, because we're going to come back to those in connection with the Deutsche Soldatenzeitung, later the Deutsche National Zeitung and Soldatenzeitung. That was the Gerhard Fry paper, to which Edwin Walker communicated the information that Lee Harvey Oswald had fired at him. And we're going to touch back again on the significance of that. And also note refugee associations. because both with many of the Vlasov, Galen-related, ABN-related refugees from Eastern Europe who were operating under the Galen organization, as well as from some of the German nationals or people of Germanic extraction who were expelled from some of the former Third Reich territories. We took a look at the Expelle organizations last week, and the cry both by the underground Nazi party in Madrid and the Adenauer government for, quote, liberation, unquote. We're going to take a look at these refugee associations by way of taking a look at liberation thinking or liberation theory in the, quote, new, unquote, Germany at the same time as it was becoming a dominant element of American political thinking in the 1952 campaign. Note here, other activities. Other fields of activities for the group were political propaganda in foreign countries carried out in close contact with the Nazi headquarters in Madrid and the initiation of conspiracies in foreign markets in behalf of German industrial cartels. Note again the very close relationship between the German industrial cartels, which were not disbanded at the end of World War II, as we looked at last week, and the post-World War II activities of this Nazi underground. More about this Nazi underground in exile in Madrid, and again, bear in mind that Kurt Ries in 44, in his discussion of the Falange and Wilhelm von Vopel, projected Madrid as a major center for the post-World War II decentralized, cellularized Nazi underground. Now we're going to hear about a fellow named Eugen Dollmann, E-U-G-E-N-D-O-L-L-M-A-N-N. He was a former SS officer who was one of the main couriers and one of the main channels of communication between the various elements of the decentralized post-World War II Nazi underground, this vast Nazi network described in the British communique. Skipping ahead a number of pages in the Nazis Go Underground, after his arrest, the gentleman was really Jürgen Dollmann, born in Regensburg, Bavaria, who had become well known to the security services of almost all European governments. Only 8 months earlier, Herr Dollmann, alias Larcher, L-A-R-C-H-E-R, had been in the headlines all over Europe in connection with deportation proceedings in Switzerland. At that time, the Swiss authorities had discovered the true identity of the, quote, Italian art dealer, unquote. During World War II, Eugen Dollmann was known as the dashing SS colonel who had played a prominent role as the top agent of Hitler and Himmler in Italy, and, quote, whose talent was more for conspiracy than for serious politics, unquote. The investigation by the Swiss authorities established the fact that the former elite guard officer had lived under a false name for several years in a fashionable villa in the Swiss lake resort Lugano. From there, Dollmann made frequent trips to Germany, Austria, Italy, Spain, and Cairo. The colonel's home in Lugano had been the center of lively traffic by mail and courier with far-flung places in the world. According to press reports, Dollmann's outpost in Switzerland was closely tied to the international Nazi headquarters in Madrid. And note again, far-flung places in the world. Note the Deutsche Heimschulen and their role in training Germans not only to go to different places of Nazis to go to different places in Germany than they were natives of, but also to go abroad and become fluent in languages. More about this Nazi government in exile in Madrid, again, just as Kurt Ries had projected in 44. Enough facts are known about the center in Madrid to show that it functions as a Nazi party organization in exile. It has been reported that the Madrid center has its own financial department, sustained by a huge treasure chest which the Nazis shipped to neutral countries before the German collapse. There is a special department for German affairs, departments for Africa and Latin America, and also a unit known as the International of Nationalists. The latter is a propaganda organization with branches all over Europe and groups operating in the Western Hemisphere and on other continents. On May 29, 1951, Times correspondent C.I. Sulzberger confirmed the existence of this group, which had revived the fascist international in various countries, quote, from Malmo to Tangier and from Rome to Buenos Aires, unquote. The Washington Post of May 6, 1956, reported on the close contacts between right-wing radicals in Germany and the center of the Nazi international in Madrid. And note here the Fascist International, jumping ahead even further from this T.H. Tetten's book in 1961, describing events in the early and mid-50s, something that we have discussed in numerous Radio Free America broadcasts, beginning in RFA number 4, coming back in Radio Free America program numbers, well, I'm not sure we discussed it in 14 or 15, but certainly in Radio Free America program number 27 and other Radio Free America broadcasts, we have taken a look at what Henrik Krüger in The Great Heroin Coup published in 1980 termed the Internacional Fascista. And this, again, was a Spanish, Italian, German, and Latin American fascist international, again, an Internacional Fascista being run by, among others, Otto Skorzeny, who was described at the time in this particular account by Henrik Krüger in The Great Heroin Coup as running the Spanish Intelligence Service, the DGS, virtually single-handedly. Again, the Nazi International in Madrid, the Nazi government in exile, or the Nazi Party organization in exile, much, again, as Kurt Rees had projected in 44. Now, resuming again T.H. Tetten's text here, The Washington Post of May 6, 1956, reported on the close contacts between right-wing radicals in Germany and the center of the Nazi International in Madrid. Observers in Bonn have traced the increasing activity of former Nazis who travel between Germany and the main centers of the International, Spain, Sweden, Switzerland, Egypt, and Argentina. They often work for import-export firms and agencies and for German motor manufacturers. They are able to tap, quote, buried, unquote, Nazi assets abroad, which may be providing the main financial backing for nationalist activities inside Germany. The names most frequently in the news in connection with the underground work of the Madrid Nazi Center are the anti-Semitic, rabble-rousing Dr. Johann von Leers, L-E-E-R-S, the SS Colonel Otto Skorzeny, S-K-O-R-Z-E-N-Y, and the German Luftwaffe ace Hans Ulrich Rudel, R-U-D-E-L. It is a well-known fact that Franco has taken the Nazi plotters to his bosom. When in 1959 a delegation of the Nazi Condor Legion visited Madrid, Franco greeted his old Civil War allies with the words, quote, please regard Spain as your second fatherland, unquote. Note that Otto Skorzeny became a key Galen agent after World War II, including the period when Galen was working for the CIA. By the way, the Nazi Condor Legion was a group of Luftwaffe aviators who fought on behalf of Franco's forces during the Spanish Civil War. Now, bear in mind something that we took a look at in Radio Free America program number 3, and that we came back to, touched back on in number 4, and came back to in a big way in Radio Free America program number 22, as well as a miscellaneous archive show about the fascist third position. One of the Galen operations that we looked at was a 1952 operation in which a number of Nazi war criminals under Otto Skorzeny, again, one of the key activists in the post-World War II Nazi underground here, again with headquarters in Madrid, the Nazi Party in exile, one of the things that Skorzeny was involved with on behalf of Galen working for CIA and Allen Dulles was to bring a bunch of former German military officers, many of them SS veterans, Gestapo veterans, and war criminals, to put together the German, the Egyptian, General Staff and the Egyptian Intelligence Service. This projected many of these people into Middle East activities. Now, this was a Galen operation. What we're going to take a look at next is the activities of this Madrid underground, and we will see the dovetailing of these activities with some of the same elements that we saw in Radio Free America programs 3 and 22, that Galen-Skorzeny Middle East operation. In January of 1952, German and Swiss papers reported an extraordinary concentration of former high SS officers and ex-Nazi officials in Cairo. They were in close contact with influential Egyptian army officers and with the fanatical Arab plotter and Hitler's friend Haj Amin al-Husseini, the ex-Grand Mufti of Jerusalem. By the way, that's H-A-J-A-M-I-N-E-L-H-U-S-S-E-I-N-I. The Basler Nachrichten of January 29, 1952, mentioned the former Nazi SS Colonel Dolman as one of those who had conferences with the Egyptian plotters in the Grand Mufti's headquarters via Aida in Heliopolis, a suburb outside of Cairo. The papers hinted that it was Dolman and his co-conspirators in Madrid who had set the fuse of an anti-British plot in Cairo, which a few months later resulted in the explosion that ended with the ousting of King Farouk. By the way, Basler Nachrichten, BASLERNACHRICHTEN, that, of course, from probably from Basel, Switzerland. In any event, note that after King Farouk was ousted, according to this paper at least, in part as a result of the Grand Mufti himself, a former SS officer, plotting with this exile Third Reich contingent, King Farouk was ousted. He was succeeded by Gamal Abdel Nasser himself, like Anwar Sadat, a former German spy during World War II, and it was the Nasser government that was aided by the Galen Skorzeny CIA contingent that we discussed in RFAs 3 and 22. Now, of the handling of the Dolman case, here it's reminiscent of the way the Naumann plotters themselves were handled. Reading again from T.H. Tettens, although the local police regarded the Dolman arrest as, quote, of great importance, unquote, someone in a high position in Bonn must have judged the affair from quite a different point of view, almost as an unfortunate accident that had to be remedied as quickly as possible. Despite the fact that the German law punishes the forging of passports and the use of false documents with long prison terms, Herr Dolman did not suffer any great inconvenience. He might have been released without any trial had not the Frankfurter Rundschau given the case considerable publicity. Under these circumstances, Dolman appeared before a lower magistrate's court a week after his arrest and was sentenced to 2 months' imprisonment for forgery. The mild sentence given to Dolman, the pressures to quash the prosecution against the Naumann plotters, the toleration of the activities of such important Nazis as Colonel Skorzeny and Hans Ulrich Rudel, give rise to the suspicion that high officials in Bonn had some secret ties with the Nazi center in Madrid. Returning again to T.H. Tettens, have the Nazi schemers, the Achenbachs, Naumanns, and company, accomplished what they aimed for after the Nazi collapse? Have they regained influence and power in the Bonn Republic? The answer has been given in the affirmative by the plotters themselves. Long before, they had captured numerous key positions in the Adenauer administration, in political parties, and in the Länder or state parliaments, L-A-E-N-D-E-R. They were exuberant about their successes in one of their secret directives circulated by the Nazi headquarters in Madrid. This lengthy document, issued in September of 1950, spoke contemptuously of the total failure of the Western occupation policy and pointed gleefully to the success of the, quote, flexible and smoothly working organization which at the end of the war provided the precondition for all the gains that by necessity emerged for Germany out of the chaos of the post-war period. 5 years after Potsdam, we can look back with pride at our accomplishments. Nothing happened by chance. Everything was carefully planned. Again, note the phrasing here. The success of the, quote, flexible and smoothly working organization, which at the end of the war provided the precondition for all the gains that by necessity emerged for Germany out of the chaos of the post-war period. 5 years after Potsdam, we can look back with pride at our accomplishments. Nothing happened by chance. Everything was carefully planned.
That again from AFA program number 37. From the fall of 1992, the text, again, The New Germany and the Old Nazis by T.H. Tettens, published in hardcover by Random House, copyright 1961, and available for download for free on the SpitfireList.com website. We have spoken for many years about the Reinhard Galen spy outfit. You heard reference to that. We're going to review some information from a very important article about the Galen organization. This was originally published in Covert Action Information Bulletin. It's called The Secret Treaty of Fort Hunt. It was authored by Carl Oglesby. And we're going to look at this aspect of the transition of the Galen spy outfit from the German Third Reich to the CIA and ultimately to NATO, finally to the Federal Republic of Germany, where it became the BND. Oglesby writes, by the way, this too is available for download for free in the news and supplemental section of the SpitfireList.com website. Carl Oglesby writes, Galen met with Admiral Carl Dönitz, D-O-E-N-I-T-Z as in zebra, who had been appointed by Hitler as his successor during the last days of the Third Reich. Galen and the admiral were now in a U.S. Army VIP prison camp in Wiesbaden. Galen sought and received approval from Dönitz, too. In other words, the German chain of command was still in effect, and it approved of what Galen was doing with the Americans. And that, in turn, was excerpted from the book. The General Was a Spy by Heinz Hoerne and Hermann Zolling, Coward, McCann, and Goffin, copyright 1972. An excerpt here. As Galen was about to leave for the United States, he left a message for Bonn with another, that's B-A-U-N, with another of his top aides, Gerhard Wessel, W-E-S-S-E-L. Quote, I am to tell you from Galen that he has discussed with Hitler's successor, Admiral Karl Dönitz, and Galen's superior and chief of staff, General Franz Halder, the question of continuing his work with the Americans. Both were in agreement, again indicating that the German chain of command was still in effect when Galen was going to work for the Americans. Jumping ahead many years, many decades, this from Spiegel, Der Spiegel of November 30th of 2013, obscuring the past. Intelligence agency destroyed files on former SS members. It's by Klaus Wiegreffe, W-I-E-G-R-E-F-E, and it reads in part as follows. Researchers have found that the BND destroyed the personnel files of around 250 BND executives in 2007. Skipping down, the commission claims that the destroyed documents include papers on people who were, quote, in significant intelligence positions in the SS, the SD, the intelligence agency of the SS and the Nazi Party, or the Gestapo, unquote. They added that some of the individuals had even been investigated for after 1945 for possible war crimes. And skipping down, for many years, the BND deliberately recruited new staff from among the relatives of existing BND employees. And the author speculates that's why the files were destroyed, because the family was kept all in the family. Again, that's 250 BND executives, not field agents, who held significant positions in the SS, the SD, or the Gestapo, and then their relatives were recruited to the present-day BND. There will be a lot of supplemental information in the description for the record program number 768. So please go to the SpitfireList.com website, look in the For the Record section and or on the front page for the description for the record 768 for supplemental information about this topic. This concludes side two of For the Record program number 768. What the hell does Dave Emery mean by Underground Reich? Part 1, The Naumann Coup Attempt of 1953. This has been recorded on January 5th of the year 2014. My name is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.